Kane is in the building.
Good evening and welcome back to another episode of the Three-Peat Podcast. This is the 11th episode of the sixth season. For those of you who haven't listened, go check out last week's episode. Great breakdown of college, a lot of good college football talk. I actually listened to it last week and you boys gave me a lot of knowledge. So I appreciate you covering me and giving me a good show. But glad to be back, and we got another one lined up for this week. So as always, I'm your host, Alex Castle, and I have the pleasure of being joined by
Josh Romowitz,
Steve Imnazzo,
and TJ Hummel.
And gentlemen, there's a lot of great news to talk about today in sports. It's been a fun week to follow, but we have a historic story to cover with the New York Yankees, and there's no other story to cover but Tyone signing with the Cubs. I mean, it's monumental stuff. No, of course it's the captain. It's the honorable Aaron Judge signing with the Yankees, 9 years, $360 million. Yep, $360 million. And this was a crazy 24 hours leading up to the story. There was the whole Twitter scandal with a false report going to the Giants. And it was crazy, but in the end,
I just want to cut you off because I think it gets even crazier than that. Because I saw reports today, basically, you know how there was the video of him arriving in San Fran for their meeting right before Thanksgiving.
Was that the one where he was at the
hotel? San Diego, not San Francisco. San Diego.
Yeah, when he's at the hotel.
Yeah. What did I say? San Diego.
Yeah.
My bad. In San Francisco. When he was in the hotel. Yeah, that was all staged.
I mean, you could kind of, you could tell it was a weird video. He's like, oh, you know, just seeing family, you know, we got something planned. I don't know. I just thought it was a weird video, but it doesn't matter. He's back, and the Yankees fan base has exploded as they should. I mean, you know, historic season last year, arguably the best athlete in New York, and he's back in pinstripes where he belongs. So instead of, you know, going around the horn and pointing out someone individually, I'm going to leave this open to the jury to talk about the honorable Aaron Judge. I'm not going to flat out ask you guys, you know, oh, how are you feeling? Cause you know, that's too basic. I just want anyone to, you know, start talking about, you know, this move for the future and what you guys see happening for the rest of free agency now that the first domino has really fallen.
So I'm going to take the first part on this, and I'm going to save like the contract talks to Stevie, TJ. I think this move for the organization and the fan base needed to happen regardless of the pay. When you think of New York sports, the face of New York sports, you think of Aaron Judge. When you think of the face of baseball, you think of Aaron Judge. He is the perfect guy to build your team, which the Yankees have been doing. He's the perfect guy that you market your team around, the guy you want to be in the commercials and the advertisements. You have the Judge's Chambers out in right field. He is the perfect guy to continue being the face of your franchise. Hence why they did this deal, and that's why he's going to eventually, in the next few days, hopefully, be named the next captain, the first one since Derek Jeter. So I'm going to let Stevie or TJ jump in. Hopefully there's more stuff to talk about, obviously.
Yeah, so I'll talk a little bit about the contract. What I found real interesting, too, with Judge's negotiations was last night, Hal Steinbrenner talked to Judge directly and pretty much asked him, you know, do you want to be a Yankee? And Judge said yes. And then I think Judge said, I do. but these are what the other teams are offering me. And so so Hal bumped up the offer, because I think last night or for the past few days, the Yankees offer was like 8 years at like 320 or something like that. Obviously million. And just because of the John Heyman falsely reporting, and listen, no one should bash John Heyman, because he is pretty much.
To be fair, though, he may not have been wrong. He said arson.
Arson Judge. So listen, the Giants, whoever Arson Judge is,
he never said anything about a good player. He never said anything about Aaron Judge. So
no, well, he did actually correct himself and then said Aaron Judge, but then he did apologize for because he didn't get a confirmation from Judge directly, but he heard from people that he trusted saying that Judge was signing with the Giants. So I think, yes, it was a big kind of mistake. It is. And you do have to kind of live with that. But at the same time, I don't think people should say he should be like banned or fired, because he reports on, you know, on a lot of these deals and trades and stuff. And usually he's like one of the first people on it and usually accurate. So I just want to kind of back him up a little bit, but he did have me terrified for a second with Arson Judge and then Aaron Judge and whatever. So back to my thing. So obviously Yankees fans are critique Hal Steinbrenner a lot and Cashman for good reason, because they've done a lot of things that typically the Yankees don't do, that Hal's father George wouldn't have done. George, to be honest, probably would have had Judge locked up already. But what the most important thing is Hal did end up locking up Judge. And for the contract, when people, like, you know, especially non-Yankees fans, or even the Yankees fans that weren't a big fan of the contract, listen, that's what Judge wanted. So if you don't want Judge, then when he's not in pinstripes and he's doing well for, say, if it was the Giants or whatever, don't cry. Or don't cry when the Yankees aren't winning as many games. As we could tell, like last year without Judge, that Yankees team would have been nothing. So, and for the non-Yankees fans, oh, $40 million a year for a guy who's 31, enjoy that back end of the contract. Listen, it's not like he's the only guy in a long-term contract. You think the Angels are worried about that the 14th, 15th, probably the 13th, 14th, 15th year of his contract? You think the Phillies are worried about, you know, the 8th, 9th, 10th year of Bryce Harper's contract? No, they're worried about now, because they're focusing on their one of the best players in baseball. Judge, from this past season, kind of proved he is the best player in baseball by winning MVP and putting up historical numbers. And you're focused on winning now. The Yankees are in win now mode. You'll worry about that back end of the contract when it gets there, because maybe by then, you know, Judge will just be a piece that, you know, we need just him a couple at-bats here and there. Or who knows, maybe he'll still be playing well at that time. You don't know. But you're worried about now, you know, Judge wasn't going to sign anywhere for a 3-year deal. He wasn't. He wanted a long-term deal to ensure that he was locked up wherever he went. You know, his family, like, for generations on end would be, you know, pretty much cared for. And so it had to be done. It had to be done. You could not have allowed Aaron Judge, a homegrown talent, the face of baseball at the moment, who's coming off that season, who's the face of the franchise, who's probably, you know, one of the biggest stars, athletes in the world, in the country, who brings you so much money revenue-wise and stuff. You can't let him go. You can't. And now he's in line to be the next captain. I don't think a formal announcement has been made, but everyone's pretty much saying it's almost like part of the deal. Like, he should be named captain next. And I think Yankees fans now are going to be much happy seeing Judge number 99 in pinstripes for, you know, the rest of his career, and run out to right field and run from the Judge's chambers and mashing home runs. And when they do the Bleachers Creatures chant, when he either does a Hulk Hogan type thing or whatever he has in store for next year, maybe. But I think I'll give Hal and Brian Cashman credit. You know, listen, it was kind of a really, like, not tough couple, you know, since the season's ended, but you really didn't know. But they pulled it out, and you got to give credit where credit is due.
I think my favorite part about this whole thing was Aaron Judge battled himself. We knew before opening day he wanted to be locked up, and the last offer he was offered before opening day was 7 years, $213.5 million. I love the fact that he bet on himself because it worked out in his favor. He wound up with an extra 2 years and an extra $146.5 million. I mean, the dude proved himself. He proved his value. I mean, his value it skyrocketed as soon as the season ended because of the offensive season that he had. But I like how you brought up the contract, Stevie. I saw something today that Howell was the Mariano Rivera of this deal. He came in and he shut it down. And my favorite thing is a lot of my favorite things about this deal. There's so many of them, but ultimately my favorite thing, this is my last favorite thing, I promise, is that he turned down more years and more money from multiple teams to stay in New York. He proved that he wanted to be a Yankee for life. He wanted to stay in New York. And it just blows my mind that he turned down 10 plus years at $400 plus million from the Padres. The Giants had a bigger offer. I don't remember the specifics of it.
I think it was around the same.
Something around that. Like,
I think their offer was the same. And Hal, in the meeting that Stevie was talking about earlier, basically matched the offer to Judge, which is why he ended up signing with us.
Okay. That's okay. That makes enough sense now. But yeah, I love that he's back in New York. And as Stevie said, I can't wait to watch him answer the roll call from the Bleacher Creatures. I can't wait to watch him mash home runs like he was last year. Will it be 62 again? I don't know. But man, I think we're in for a great season again from number 99.
Absolutely. And I think another point that you want to bring up, and this is what Josh had said when we were talking about earlier, is the fact that he took this deal when there was more money on the table shows you that he's a special type of athlete in today's world of sports, that that he stays loyal. You know, I don't know how often you see it with baseball. I'm sure it follows the same pattern as the other two sports, but guys staying with their teams, it's rare. Everyone is about either or chasing the money, or they're going to chase the ring one way or another. And Judge, he said, you know what? I want to be a Yankee. I want to rep pinstripes for the rest of my career. And he's all in. And I really don't think too many guys would do that. And the fact that this was with a New York team, the toughest market in sports. Yeah, I'm saying it. It's the toughest market in sports. The fans, everything about it really shows you that he's a special type of athlete.
Passionate is a better word to use. Not toughest, passionate.
Passionate. Yeah. They're the most passionate fans. They're you know, it's tough to be a New York athlete. And I think the fact that he's staying really shows not only who he is as a person, but I think it really fits the mold of the Yankees even more. So it really is great.
And going off of your point, like, you see guys in the past couple of years, the Freddie Freeman, the Corey Seager, guys who were heroes in their World Series runs. Freddie Freeman with the Braves, Corey Seager with the Dodgers, the homegrown talents, the guys who were on their team for so long, chose getting paid versus staying loyal. I mean, Freddie now obviously is a different circumstance given the issues with the Dodger, with the Braves and the Dodgers and all of that. But at the time, it seemed like, to all of us, when he signed the deal with the Dodgers, that, you know, maybe that this is the harsh reality of a business. Guys are going to chase the bag instead of staying loyal. So it was very nice to see a guy like Aaron Judge turn down more money from other teams. We saw Trey Turner do the same thing with the Padres. He was offered, I think it was $342 million. and he took an 11-year, $300 million deal to go to the Phillies.
And I saw a funny tweet. It was like, Aaron Judge, do you want to be this guy? And it was a picture of Robbie Cano with the Mariners at his like introductory press conference after he just signed with them. Or do you want to be this guy who's Jeter with, you know, champagne all over him after they just like won either the pennant or World Series or whatever. And pretty much it shows you that throughout this whole time, you know, Judge has been a loyal guy. You know, you saw him when he kissed after the home run, he kissed the NY on the jersey and kind of looked at the camera and winked, or the sweatshirts, New York or nowhere. And when he was, you know, debating between I don't think the Padres were really in it. I think just because they were going to make such a big offer, you almost have to listen to it. I mean, when they're offering you almost $500 million, yeah, you kind of have to be intrigued by it. But, you know, obviously the Giants are more the hometown team for him. And plus, like, everyone kept saying, like, that when you're a free agent, like, you got to enjoy and really, especially a guy like Judge, who, you know, this is going to be his one big deal that he signs. He has to really think about it carefully. And it seemed like, you know, obviously he's always wanted to go back to the Yankees, but it was just, it had to be the right offer. And he didn't want, just because he wanted to be there, it doesn't mean he was going to take a huge discount or take less years or whatever. Like I said, this is more than just baseball at this point. You know, he just wants to make sure his wife, you know, I don't think he has any kids yet, but I'm sure at some point he will, you know, his grandkids, like, that they're set up for success. So it's not just at the moment, I want to be rich and, you know, get all these nice cars and houses and jewelry and everything like that, like all the nice things money can get you. But like, he wants to make sure that the Judge family and his parents too, everyone's taken care of, everyone's fine. And this deal will allow him to do that. So I'm just, he was a loyal guy and, homegrown, and it makes it that much sweeter. So,
well, now it's safe to say he grew up in the San Fran area or wherever exactly it was, but New York is his home.
That's what I was going to say. The Yankees are like his home team now. I mean,
New York is his home. I guess his family is going to be a New York family.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You know, and like I said, now he's been playing for the Yankees franchise now for quite a bit, but then he was in their farm system since he was, you know, in his young 20s. So, yes, he still got his California ties, but promise, I couldn't have said it better myself. Like, New York is his home now. So, and he's going to wear that NY on his hat and on his chest proud, like he has always done, and especially if they give him that captain, you know, title,
captainship. I think,
yeah, the captain title. Then he'll do that just as much, you know, proud and be humble about it. And I'm just, you know, not to now, just kind of reiterating everything, but I'm just so glad it got done. I really was kind of a bit of a wreck yesterday when I first saw reports that he was gonna head back west.
Yeah, I've never seen Stevie so so nervous, so frantic. Your heart was beating so loud. I was like, this is not a side of Stevie that I've seen before. So on all accounts, we're glad that this deal got done. And like I said before, it's the first domino to fall. And we know that the Yankees are not done yet. As the weeks progress with free agency, we'll continue to cover the moves, not only on the show, but on our Instagram. And shout out to TJ for keeping up with free agency. He's been making some great posts, and including the first post that was made, the first domino to fall in free agency. Jacob DeGrom going to the Lone Star State, signing a deal with the Rangers, 5 years, $185 million. And the deal includes a conditional 6-year option that would make the deal worth $222 million with a full no trade clause. Now, before we dive into this, you know, my brother is a Mets fan, and we were talking about this yesterday. And apparently behind the and I don't know how true this is, you know, but we're it's worth the speculating, because DeGrom is it's a huge signing, and apparently DeGrom had an issue with living in New York. Apparently he wanted to live in Florida, and Steve Cohen was willing to pay for him to make the trip to New York every time he needed to for the game. Now, again, I don't have any confirmation on this. It's just speculation. But when you hear something like that, it definitely gives you the sense that he one way or another, he didn't want to be in New York anymore. And I don't think Mets fans are too upset about it. I mean, I know some of them were
anymore.
That's fair. And there's a good one of the good reasons for that, which we'll dive into later. But overall, I mean, this is a huge contract. Guy's been injury prone. He's going to a team, as far as I know, that doesn't really have any substance right now. So, I mean, you know, we talk about loyalty, unless I'm missing something here. This was clearly him chasing the money. But my question for you guys is, what do you guys think was the real contributing factor that wanted him to leave New York? I mean, yeah, they lost in the wild card, but this was still a team who won over 100 games, manager of the year, and they got a lot of talent going for them.
I'll jump in, and I think the contributing factor was the money in the years. He the fact that the Rangers gave him a 5-year deal for like $165 million is insane. I think Mets fans will realize that they'll be glad that the Mets didn't re-sign him, because listen, when he's healthy, he's one of the best. But he's now in his, I think, mid-30s now. I want to say he's what, 34-ish? So he's not even, say, 30. I mean, you know, because when the Yankees signed Cole and when some of these other pitchers signed, you know, they're in their late 20s, early 30s. But like DeGrom now, I mean, granted, Scherzer's 30, like, 9 or whatever, 38, but he's different than DeGrom. So the fact that, and plus, I think I saw a report too that the Mets weren't even given a chance to match it or like give a final offer. I think they pretty much, he agreed to the deal with Texas. So clearly.
Wow. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
That shows you something right there too.
Exactly. So I don't really think obviously I think a part of him does care about winning. And I think, you know, he's not like, I'm not going to say he's the most unloyal guy, but clearly he's not too loyal if he didn't even allow the Mets to give a final offer. And clearly he cared too much about the money stuff, where when he saw that offer from the Rangers, he's kind of like, screw it, I'm going to do it. And plus he gets to keep all that, cause there's no like income tax in Texas. Well, New York, it's a lot. So, he gets to keep all that too. So for me, like I said, I think Mets fans, they'll like when it first happened. And like you said, I think there's now starting to get over, especially I know we'll probably talk more about it in a little, probably after this, but signing Verlander really kind of helped wipe that away too. And obviously still having Scherzer. So I don't think it will be like, obviously it's a loss. He was their ace for how many years? Cy Young winner. I think 2 years there. So like he you can't knock the dude, but I think his age, the injury history, which isn't like a small sample, it's a large sample. And even this year, he didn't look like his true self, in my opinion. I still think he looked like one of the better pitchers, but not the DeGrom of the past. So he could easily allow the Mets to allow them to give a final offer, since they just won over 100 games. So clearly he's going to go to Texas, who had one of the worst records in baseball. Yes, they have a lot of up-and-coming talent. They signed Corey Seager last year. They signed Marcus Semien. But they still, with those two guys, didn't improve at all. So I don't know. I think he was more worried about just the money and the years, and really could care less about the Mets and winning. Totally, you know.
Yeah, to kind of piggyback off your points, Stevie. In 2022 alone, DeGrom pitched in 11 games because he missed most of the season with a shoulder injury. In 2021, he was on the injured list 6 separate occasions. He was on the injured list 2020 3 separate times, on the injured list 19 and 18 once. So it's not like he has like early on career injuries. He's had injuries follow him his whole career. I personally don't think that the Rangers should have signed him because in my opinion, he's too much of a health risk, but they threw all the money and the years at him and they decided they want to overlook his injury riddled past for a generational talent. I mean, it makes sense, but at the same time, it's a really, really big risk that I don't think I would take if I was the GM for Texas.
I'm with you on that. But I also don't know, though, if I would do what the Mets did, and that was signing Justin Verlander to the amount of money that they did sign him. Yes, he's still producing at 42 years old, but $43 million a year for the next 2 years with an option for the third year, I believe.
Yeah, with a third optional. Or it's something crazy, but it's a third year option.
Is ridiculous because in any sport, you can't rely on someone that old to be that guy. Look at LeBron right now in the Lakers. Look at Tom Brady with the Buccaneers. You can't rely on guys that old to be your guy. And then if you want to make the argument, well, oh, he's the number two. Great. Max Scherzer, who's 39, is going to be that guy. Like, what are we doing here? The Mets could have signed a guy like Carlos Rodon, who's 10 years younger and just as efficient. Obviously, he didn't win the Cy Young. That was Justin Verlander. But you get more value out of him. So it really blows my mind. You get rid of a guy who missed a lot of starts because of an injury, which is understandable. But now you're going to lose Justin Verlander in 2 years because he's going to be retired by then. So I really have no idea what the Mets are actually doing because it just seems like they're throwing out money to throw out money. Because sure, the Mets might be in a win now situation, but do they really have the team to win this year or next year? I really don't know because their bullpen still has a lot of question marks and they still have a lot of holes on their team.
I think, and Mets fans even joke about this. It's Uncle Steve throwing all the money at the wall, and I agree with you. It's like they took a step back in a way. I mean, listen, the guy just won a World Series, is coming off a great season, but to me, this type of move that they're making, it's a move that's like, okay, in this next year or two, or three, if he takes this third year option, that they're saying, okay, in the next 3 years, him and Scherzer are going to run the bullpen and everything else is going to fall into line. Now, listen, it's great for them to be reunited. I love seeing the pictures of them from Detroit together, but it really makes you think what is the mindset of this team. And I know Steve wanted to elaborate on it a little.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing. I mean, listen, I think Verlander is a great option to replace DeGrom. I mean, he's a reigning Cy Young, and it's not like they signed him to like a 6-year deal at his age. My only thing though with that is now you have two like 40-year-old pitchers, and then they signed Jose Quintana, who's I think into his mid-30s. So the rotation doesn't really have any sort of youth in it. So my thing is, like, when these guys are kind of getting ready to retire, like, I don't know what the Mets farm system's like with their pitching-wise. I know a lot of their top prospects, like Brett Beatty, he's third base. I want to say it was, like, Francisco Alvarez or whatever. Was a catcher, like, DH. So I don't know if they have, like, a top pitching prospect, but they're going to have to find youth somewhere for the rotation because – Quintana's 33, so that's not too bad, but still, You know, they lost Taiwan Walker to their rival, the Phillies, who I thought was really a great pitcher
for
them.
That's a little bit of a trend there.
Yeah.
You've lost
Zach Wheeler.
Zach Wheeler.
Yep. So now, and then now Walker. So I thought he was a great, you know, younger pitcher for them. I mean, he wasn't like totally young, but he was in his late 20s.
Bassett is a free agent who was supposed to be their third guy who turned into their workhorse when DeGrom was out.
Yeah, and, you know, same thing. He was older, but not as old as the first, you know, Verlander and Scherzer. So, like, obviously, Verlander and Scherzer, they're going to be excellent. But the thing is, unless if Steve Cohen is just kind of taking it year by year, they got to get more youth around that team, you know, including their manager, too, Buck Showalter. He's old himself. Like, there's a lot of and for a while there, I think the Mets had too much youth, and that's why they wanted to bring in guys with experience, and it clearly worked last year. But can it continue to work? And then fans will probably trip the Yankees. Well, Judge is 31, you know, Judge is 30, Cole's 31, you know, Donaldson's old and whatever. But the fact of the measure is, like, listen, these guys will be good for the Mets. I say they're good moves, but they can't just keep getting 40-year-old guys or guys in their well into their 30s. Like, they need to still have some. I'm not saying like youth has to be like they're 21 years old, but you got to get guys that, you know, will still have a lot of years to play. Like, Lindor is a great player. He still has a lot of years left, you know. You know, they called up some of the young guys, or Pete Alonso, like, that's good. But some of their other guys, like, especially that rotation, you gotta bring younger guys in, or else you're going to go from a top rotation to a bottom one real quick.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder what their plan is for next season. And I, you know, go back to the thought of, are they in this win now mode? You know, we don't know, and only time will tell. But I definitely think it was a good rebound signing. Now you pair another guy with Scherzer. It's a guy that he even has better chemistry with. So I really think there's hopefully going to be a better feeling in the dugout for the Mets. But a lot more moves to continue to cover with baseball as we go. More dominoes to fall. But a great first episode to kick it off. But we gotta get into football, man. I mean, week 13, I don't know how you guys feel, but week 13 had some of the craziest games I've seen all season. And before we, you know, we get into the portion of talking about our teams, the one game that I really want to talk about is the Bengals-Chiefs game. You know, this was a rematch of the AFC Championship last year. It was Ja'Marr Chase's first game coming back, so you don't know how that's going to be. But Joe Burrow was Joe Cool, man. I mean, even without Joe Mixon, they were able to get the ball into the end zone. And T. Higgins is a great complimentary guy to have with Ja'Marr Chase. I'm not a big fan of Zach Taylor as a coach, but something is clicking with this team. So, and then you look at the Chiefs, you know, Kelce had a fumble. You know, their run game is a little all over the place right now. I will say shout out to Pacheco. He's a Rutgers guy. He's now getting the number one role on the team. And I think he's going to be great for them. But, you know, this is still the Chiefs, and this is Patrick Mahomes. And this is a guy who, you know, who's gone on the record and saying in interviews that it's this next Super Bowl that will mean more to him than anything. And listen, the Chiefs are definitely going to be going into the playoffs. They're definitely going to be a top team. But looking at this game, even though it was a regular season game, and I'll ask you this, Josh, are the Bengals the new kryptonite for the Chiefs?
I mean, I think it would be the opposite. I think you would have to think about it in the reverse. I don't think it's fair to say that the Chiefs are the top dog of the AFC when the Bengals are the ones who went to the Super Bowl last year. Joe Burrow is 3-0 against Pat Mahomes. So I don't really think all the talk should be, are the Chiefs the top dogs of the AFC? I think the Bengals, as of right now, are still the top dogs of the AFC until someone dethrones them. So are the Chiefs at that level? They might be, but for right now, I think this is still the Bengals division. And will they make a repeat? I don't really know. The Chiefs definitely could compete with them. The Bills can compete, but they got a big loss with Von Miller. We'll get into that later, I'm sure. The AFC is so wide open. So, but I think this is the Bengals division, not the Chiefs.
Definitely put it in a better way than I was getting to. But yeah, I mean, it's really impressive. And I like Joe Burrow a lot. And I think he's a great captain for this team. I think he's really commanding in the huddle. I think he's just got a good relationship with his offense. And the defense has got playmakers too. I'm not sure what they got, totally sure what they got in their linebacking core, but I know they got a nice group in battling in the trenches, and they got talent in the secondary. So it's really going to be interesting to see the picture of the AFC going forward, not only with, you know, the Bengals beating the Chiefs, but now you have Lamar Jackson hurt. So what does that say for the Ravens? I mean, you know, the whole picture of the AFC is going to be very interesting, and you really want to look at the AFC East now. You talk about Von Miller. He's out for the season. And that was really weird how that whole story transpired. First, it was, you know, some sort of injury. I think it was the knee initially. It has to be the knee initially.
Like, I think it was like a sprained ACL, which is why he went to the – which is why he was put on the IR, and that is why he went in for a surgery as like a minor cleanup, and that's why they found out that it was a torn ACL that needed to be repaired.
And it's just crazy how it all – you know, how it all transpired. And today the tweet came out, he's out for the season. And this is a big blow for the Bills defense. I mean, we've seen what Von Miller has done, not only with this Bills team this season, but when he showed up in LA last year and how much he contributed to that Rams team. And
I was going to say, no, that, I think the Von Miller loss, not too many people are going to be like, because their offense is so good and they still have so many other pieces. But I really think that Von Miller loss is going to hurt them a lot more than they think, especially in the come playoff time. I mean, he really, like, really brought a different kind of presence to this Buffalo defense, especially in the pass rush. And I think even if he was getting sacks, like, they're getting pressures because he demanded a lot of attention. So now when you don't have him in, it's kind of like the same D-line that they rolled in last year. And when it needed to take down like Pat Mahomes and stuff, it couldn't, or force pressure on, like, yeah, like say, because Pat Mahomes obviously took him out in back-to-back playoffs, they couldn't. Von Miller probably could have done that. But now, and I just feel bad for Von Miller himself. He's such a great player. When you see a player like his caliber go out, and see the kind of impact he had on Buffalo, who really was like, you know, like who else can really make that much of an impact on that team? They have so many guys, but he did. So I do feel bad for him. And, you know, hopefully the surgery and everything goes well and he's ready for next year. But Buffalo is going to have to figure out something, because, yes, obviously they'll be fine in the offense with Allen and Diggs and Gabe Davis and Dawson Knox, that line. And obviously they still have a lot of guys on defense, but they're going to lack some pass rush now, or stopping the run from that position, that a guy's going to have to step up and fill. And I don't know if they have a guy of that caliber, or, you know, or really no one of that caliber, but someone that can step in and do a decent job. Because Von Miller really was playing tremendous for Buffalo.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just been a great face for the league right now. I think if I remember correctly, Ed Oliver, I think he's with the Bills. He's a D tackle or nose tackle. He's probably going to be the next guy to step up on that line. But this is crazy.
Greg Rousseau are two guys to look out for.
And this is talk about timing. Look at the game that they got this week. They got a home game against the Jets. And you know what?
Miller was already going to be out regardless.
Right. That's true. That's true. I guess now maybe there's more pressure put on. I don't know, you know, how this will affect the defense too much for this game specifically, but It's still a division matchup. It's a home game. And you know what? I don't think that this should be signed, sealed, and delivered. And I'll tell you why. Not only with Von Miller being out, but I haven't been too crazy about how Josh Allen has played this season. I really haven't. There's just been certain plays that I've seen from him that I kind of scratch my head. And I'm like, what is this guy thinking? He's just making sloppy plays, and it just doesn't look like the Josh Allen that we've seen in the past. And there's stats that definitely show it. So the Jets are coming off a tough loss against the Vikings, but there is optimism, and that's Mike White, and he's really started to utilize this offense. Big game out of Garrett Wilson. And it's hopeful for Jets fans. So what are your big things going into this game on Sunday, Josh? The Pats did just lose last Thursday, so that helps you guys out. But it's still going to be a tough game in Buffalo. What are the key things that you know that this team needs to do? Doesn't necessarily have to be on offense, if it's on defense or both sides of the ball. What's the big thing that they need to start off early to really get the win on the road?
So the big thing is, first, the Jets have already beaten this team once this year. Jets beat them at home. So we know what it takes to beat these guys. We could go into their house. We could beat them. We, like you mentioned, that you haven't been impressed with Josh Allen, and you've seen a lot of turnovers, especially when it comes to the red zone. We saw in the game against the Jets, the Jordan Whitehead pick was a very, what kind of throw is that type of pass, where it looked like Jordan Whitehead was one of Josh Allen's receivers. It was that bad of a throw. The carelessness and accuracy really has just been a big question of him this year. Specifically, we've never questioned his arm talent and how good his deep ball is, but accuracy has been flaky at times. So hopefully we have our secondary. We have Sauce Gardner. We have DJ Reed. They've did their job in the second half against the Bills, where Stephon Diggs didn't get a target at all in the second half, which is amazing to think about, kind of the kind of year that Diggs is having. And we completely shut him out. Gabe Davis was a no factor the entire game. So our corners have done their job all year. Last week against Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, arguably one of the better wide receiver duos in the league, we shut down. If it wasn't for Justin Jefferson's touchdown, neither one of them would have been a factor in the game, because Jefferson had only 40 yards receiving and Thielen had two catches for like 10 yards. So other than that, our corners have been doing their job all year and have been tested with some elite wide receivers all year. So going up against Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs is just another week for these guys, because they've been tested all year. Our offense, you mentioned Mike White now being the guy. We'll wait and see what happens with Zach Wilson. Wait and see what happens with Mike White. But for right now, it's the Mike White show. You like to call him Iron Mike White. And he's been very impressive. He's thrown for 300 yards each of his two starts this year, stemming back to last year where he's had his multiple 300 yard games, especially the Cincinnati game. So he has had big moments. He's getting Garrett Wilson the ball a lot more. He's making smart decisions. He's hitting the easy routes. So it's good football to see because the Jets receivers are very talented when they get the ball. You got Elijah Moore being way more effective now. Corey Davis is being involved. And then you have our two tight ends, Uzama and Conklin. So the Jets offense is very talented. All you got to do is just get them the ball and let them do their job. So when it comes to game plans, which now I'm finally answering the question, just play Jets football. It's as simple as that, because not many teams, if any teams realistically, could shut down this Jets team. Yes, they're banged up on the O-line. Yes, they're missing some running backs with Breece Hall out for the year. But there's still a lot of talent on this team. Young, explosive talent that really not many teams can match up. And that's, we got to use that to our advantage. We have a quarterback who is accurate and can get our receivers the ball. Let them do their thing. And on defense, the Jets are a top five defense right now in the league. In yards, points, sacks, takeaways, you name it. They're a top five defense. Quinnen Williams is playing at an all-pro level. Sauce Gardner's playing at an all-pro level. CJ Mosley might be playing at an all-pro level. So we have guys on the defense that are playing elite football. So if we can make Josh Allen uncomfortable, which is easy to do, not easy, but it is possible. So if we can get to the quarterback and make him uncomfortable, make him have some head-scratching throws, I'll like our chances. And the Jets are coming off a bad loss, like you said, and they're being countered out, which the Jets seems like play better when the backs are against the wall, people betting against them. They're a 10-point underdog, so that's when the Jets seem to play the best.
I'm sure it must feel weird for you to say that the overall game plan should be just play Jets football, because you look at how they've played the last few seasons, and when you say play Jets football, that's like, well, I don't want to see how the Jets are playing. So I like that. Just play Jets football.
Going to that, it was actually funny. I was talking to someone from work today about that. I was like, it's crazy to think that the beginning of the year, if I were to say that just play Jets football, we have a chance to make the playoffs. We have multiple divisional wins already, and we're doing this with quarterback questions, I would have looked at you like you're crazy. But like, that's the reality right now with the Jets, and it's working somehow.
And whatever you got to do works. And I also just realized too that last game that the Jets played, Josh Allen got hurt and he had that elbow injury. So there's a lot of different storylines going into this game. And it's going to be a great battle. I'm not too thrilled about, you mentioned Gabe Davis. I was really high on him in the beginning of the season. Now I'm not. So it's going to be great. And unfortunately, your phrase of just play, you know, your team's football, I can't say that about my Giants. And we're coming off a really weird game, tying with Washington. This was a game that we needed to win. And, you know, everyone says a tie is better than a loss. And frankly, I agree with the players that this game feels like a loss. I mean, there was so many opportunities to win this game, and we blew it. And my biggest takeaway from this game is Saquon. The past three games, I have not seen the Barkley that we've seen all season. There's a lot of speculation. He's burnt out already from the amount of usage. There's an issue with his shoulder. The list goes on and on. But the reality is that when he's not moving the ball productively, there's no offense, because we don't have the receiving core that we need. And Daniel Jones can only scramble so much and have these dump off passes. And there's only so many schemes that that these receivers can run that can be successful. Shout out to Hodgins. I will say he's been a great pickup. There's something in the water in Buffalo, because everything Buffalo we've brought to this team has worked so far. The game this Sunday, I don't know how to feel about it. I really hate being a Debbie Downer, but I don't see too much hope of beating this team, this 11-1 Eagles team. I'm gonna hit you both with some Giants questions, because Stevie, I know you're a Chicago guy, and I'm not gonna torture you with any questions of that nature. But your brother is a Giants fan, so I know you watch these games. What do you think? I'm not even gonna say for this next game, because this Eagles game is just gonna be so tough. From what you've seen, what's something that you think the Giants can be doing that they need to start fixing now if they want to be taking this wild card spot?
I think the game management, I don't know, the past couple of weeks has not looked like the game management of the first couple of weeks. You know, Daboll was like, he had a big set of balls on him and was taking risks and stuff, and was paying off. And now he's a little too conservative, or even Kafka offensively is a bit conservative. Wink, I mean, he's still sending the pressure, you know, and it's working. But offensively, and then just, you know, I just don't like some of the decisions that they're making that I felt like they weren't making beginning of the season when you're winning games. So granted, you're a lot healthier. It's kind of tough right now with some of the guys that they have. But, you know, like, I thought the timeouts, when they used them, weren't at the right moments. Like, I think Daboll used that timeout with like 2 minutes left. And then it was some poor offensive calling. You had like two deep shots called right away. And then the run, and then you still gave Washington like over like a long time. And then you used it up. So then when you got the ball back, cause then the defense stopped Washington, you only had very little time to try to go down the field and score. While if you had that extra timeout, you could have called and had, say, 50 seconds instead of like 20 seconds, you know? So that's my biggest thing, because obviously, like, the receiver's position, like, even if you were to sign Odell, I don't know when he'd come in and play. Obviously you can't trade for a guy. Like, this is kind of the guys that you're rolling with. So I can't say personnel wise, you're getting some guys back healthy, but I think it's just the way some of the decisions that have been made throughout the game have not been on par with what was happening at the beginning of the season. I just don't know what. I think, I guess, injuries changed that a little bit, but I think that's been one of the biggest things. And then obviously Philly, the Giants are going to have to play almost a perfect game if they want to beat Philly. It is at home, which helps, but at the same time, Philly just looks, it doesn't matter where they play, who they play, they're coming. You know, they can score points, their defense can make plays, they'll force turnovers, they'll get to the QB. Hurts will either run it for 30 yards or air it for 50 yards to AJ Brown. So the Giants are really going to have to play a really sound football game, and not really commit dumb penalties. And I think the coaching really has to be, unless I'm not saying Daboll sucks now. No, he doesn't. And the fact that, you know, he's still leading this team well, and that you guys are still competitive with all these injuries and stuff. I'm just saying there are certain things, though, that he's got to do different that he wasn't even doing in the beginning of the season. So to me, I think that's the biggest thing. And like you said, you're right. I do watch the Giants because unless the Bears are playing like a New York team or playing on primetime, I can't watch them. So I don't have Red Zone. I don't have any like, I don't have the NFL, like what's the other one? Sunday Ticket. So I can't watch them, so I'm always checking the updates for Bears, so I'm not, like, stuck watching the Giants, but, like, I don't mind watching Giants either, because, like, pretty much my whole family likes watching them, and they are the local team. So, and especially this year, I do not want to watch the Bears, so I'll talk to you guys about the Bears in March. But for the Giants' sake, I think I think they just need to kind of, the coaching needs to do what they were doing in the beginning of the season, and the players just have to really try their best just to, like I said, not make stupid decisions. You know, Jones can't be fumbling again, like, regularly. These receivers, like, kind of, if it's in your hands, you have to catch it. I don't care if you're a backup rotational guy in the NFL, you're still in the NFL. I mean, come on. Like, if it hits my hands, in high school, my coaches were expecting me to catch it. So you're in the NFL, you still get paid a lot of money. So they just have to, like, just play football and not try to do anything. Football. Yeah, and not try to do anything too fancy. And yeah, because these games now, I mean, you think, so you just tied Washington. So you got swept by Dallas this year. You just tied Washington. You play Philly this week, and then you play Washington again, and Washington has a bye week this week, so now they have 2 weeks of watching the tape against playing you guys to prepare for you guys. So they, I don't know who made the schedules. It must have been a Washington fan, because they hit the jackpot for them. Because the fact that Washington has a bye week after playing you guys and then play you guys right after is incredible luck for them, and it's awful luck for you guys. Now that you have to play Philly and then play them again in Washington.
And that game is flexed now too.
To Sunday night.
Yep. Yep. So it's definitely a lot to take in. And before we wrap up, I always got to get the 2 cents of my fellow Giants fan here, the guy that keeps me sound. TJ, do you have the same feelings that I do about Barkley? Do you feel like there's something going on with him, or you just think it's just been a rough few weeks of sledding for him, and he'll be back before we know it?
I think he'll be back to form. It just goes into the coaching and the game plan. We saw how big of a horse he was in the first 7 weeks of the season. First 10 weeks, really. Week 10, he started to fall off. It's now week 14, and he's only averaging 3.3 yards per carry in the last 3 games. So I don't know if there's, like, injury or what. I think my initial thoughts are to point at the game plan and the coaching, but they got to do something. Because I don't know about you, Castle, but in that Washington game, they would throw the first 2 downs. Washington knew that they were going to run the ball with Barkley.
Yep.
Like it was predictable game planning. Washington knew what we were going to do before we were going to do it. And that just goes into their film and their prep. But I think that Kafka and Dabes have to go back to the drawing board and get a little more creative. Like, I liked when they were doing Wildcat. I loved when they brought out like the big tight end package, but it would be Saquon at the running back, and he would like shovel pass it to Daniel Bellinger or something. I think they got lost into trying to figure out what's going to work instead of, hey, this worked the first 7 to 10 weeks of the season. I think we should go back to what we were doing instead of trying to evolve the game plan. I think they should go back to what they were doing before. And it was obviously working because they were winning games. And just to your point about the sweep at Dallas, I think the Giants fared the best against Dallas in this division, because they were only 1-score games both times. So they weren't dominant blowouts. They weren't one-sided games. They were both kind of really sloppy games, at least the 2 I saw from both teams. I
don't know. I think it's not really fair to say the Thanksgiving one wasn't a blowout, because that game was
28-20 isn't a blowout.
Correct, but the Giants scored a last-second touchdown, because that was a 2-score game the entire game. Then the Giants got a last-second touchdown to make it a lot closer.
Garbage time TD.
It was a garbage time TD. It was a 14-point game the entire game.
I'm still gonna keep my point the way it is. Because at the end of the day, it's still, even garbage time or not, it could have been a 14-point game instead of an 8-point game. But anyway, I just think Dabes needs to be a little more aggressive. He needs to go back to what was working in the beginning of the season. I know the receiving core has been nothing short of awful, but I liked your point on Hodgins. You and I were talking about him on Sunday. We're both really excited with where he's going. And I just think they need to, as much as it may not sound right, they have to pass the ball.
Yep.
I know they really can't count on their receivers. At this point, you have to mix up more passing than anything, because especially against this Philly defense, they're going to know when they're going to run the ball with Saquon. I think they need to do something to get Saquon not more involved, but get him back to form. Like, he was running downfield in the beginning of the season. He's over 1,000 yards now. Why not build more? I think it also goes into a whole bunch of stuff, but they need to be aggressive. They need to go back to what was working in the first half of the season. And I think if they can play like they were against the teams that they were down and out against, i.e. all of them so far this season, they play well with their backs against the wall, kind of like on the other side of New York there, the other team that shares the same stadium. They got to play with their backs against the wall, and that proved to be working. I think they got to go back to that and go into every game thinking, we're the underdogs, let's make something happen, especially going into this Philadelphia game.
They need to go back to the football that we saw at the beginning of the season, and there's so much more to dive in, good and bad. But before we wrap up the show, no X Factor, no start and sits this week. We're just going to do a prediction of, I believe it's the only game on Saturday, 3 p.m., Army-Navy. The only thing I know about this game is that Navy usually passes the ball maybe twice the whole game. So
both teams, it's only triple option from both teams.
Oh, God. So I don't even know how to formulate a score. I mean, you guys are the college crew, so I'll let you guys go first, and I'll try to think of some semi-realistic prediction in the meantime.
You want me to go?
Take us home, Steve.
Listen, I'm going to kind of do a Lee Corso pick kind of thing. So, listen, Navy won last year.
You're going to do that. Do you have any mascot heads handy? I mean, if you're going to go coach, you got to go all out.
Actually, you know what, From? It's you go. I got to go grab a prop or a piece. I got to go grab something.
Well, it won't be that long, so you better hurry up. You better start running, because my pick really isn't that long. My whole family, this is a given. We're rocking with Army. We do every year. It's go Army, beat Navy. We don't like the Navy here, and we don't expect that to change. Yeah, Castle, you, for someone who really hasn't watched this game, it's quite a scene, because it really is triple options every single play. You know what to expect, and yet somehow both teams make it work, and it is an exciting game.
Is the game going to be played in West Point, or is it a special?
So last year was at MetLife. This year it's in Philly.
Oh, well, that just brings the value down of the game.
Well, it's because neutral site.
I mean, sure, it's neutral, but you want to have it in an enjoyable city. But that's a whole nother conversation. So so you're rocking with Army. Do you have a score prediction?
Yeah. 27-23 Army.
Okay. I like it. All right, Stevie Corso, you're up. What's your prediction?
So Navy won last year. Navy has won, has really run the rivalry for a long time. You know, and those midshipmen, they got those cool NASA unis. A lot to like about Navy. But I can't go Navy. And as I put on my Army pullover, I'm going with my Black Knights of Army West Point. I've been there numerous times, just like Promise. I'm an Army guy. I wanted to have their like song queued up. I couldn't find it. But
probably also would get flagged for copyright.
Probably that too. So I won't play it. But you guys see it. It's kind of the old logo, not the new logo. But I got it way back. I think actually my brother got it when we went to one of the games. But I got Army. They're going to make up for last year. And let's see, score. You know, I know it's going to be low scoring. I'm going to go Army 23, Navy 14. 9-point margin victory for the Black Knights in Philly. They won't win the Commanders-in-Chief because I think Air Force already won that. But they're going to sing last. Book it in right now.
And just to put the cherry on top, as of right now, the current line is Navy -2.5. And the over-under, we would have been way over with our picks.
What is it, like 10?
32 is the over.
32?
Yeah. The over? Wait, Stevie, I'm sorry. Tell me one more time your prediction. I want to write these down just to see in the end who gets the closest.
23-14 Army.
23-14 Army.
Said 27-23.
Yep, that I got. And I got that you have Army too.
TJ, are you taking Navy just to be different?
I'm going to let TJ go and then I'll give my prediction.
All right. As much as you all know how much I eat, sleep, and breathe college football, I obviously have to roll with Army here. Only because most of my family has been in like the armed services, like military, like Army side, rather than like Navy and Air Force. So I'm going Army over Navy. And I have a score of Army 19, Navy 8.
19-8. Okay. And you got Army.
Low scoring game, but I think there's going to be some tomfoolery about. There almost is every year. There's something crazy. There's some sort of something that goes on in the game. It's Army Navy. It's one of the oldest rivalries. And I feel like I had to be outside of the box on this one. And I love all your reactions to it. As the viewers at home cannot see, everybody is, their jaw is to the floor. They should shut it before they get flies in there. But I said,
well, maybe before Saturday's game, we'll do a little prediction on our story. See who comes the closest.
But I will say Navy's unis this year are fresh. The NASA ones.
Yeah, but they are pretty fire.
They are. But listen, Army's is just as nice.
Well, they're fire every year. They're all themed off of something war related and or armed forces related. It's a spectacle to be there.
It is. I mean, not only the game has a lot of history, but then you have the cadets, the midshipmen, you know, and then now the uniforms seem to be becoming more of a trend in this game too. Like it's beautiful to see. And like I said, trust me, I mean, I love watching my Wisconsin all year. I love watching all these big top 25 matchups all year, but probably one of the game I look forward to most every single year is the Army Navy game. And I hope one day to watch it in person, but until then I'm still going to watch it. And yeah, it's just what a tremendous, tremendous game. It only happens once a year. That's it.
I didn't realize.
And it's the only game. That's how you know it's Army Navy, because it is after playoff weekend and it's right before bowls.
I didn't realize how
same weekend as the Heisman too. It's a beautiful weekend.
You know, that's the beauty of having you guys as co-hosts, is you always paint the picture for me for college football as someone, you know, trying to get into it more. I'm going to keep my prediction short for that reason. I feel like because I'm host, I have to go against everyone else for this week.
That'll just mean our picks are right. If you picked Army, that means Navy would be confirmed the winner. So you're doing all of us a favor by picking against us.
So I'm rolling with Navy. Only thing I know about them is a kid from my town plays on Navy and he's pretty good. So I'll show Navy some love for having someone from Wayne on the team. So I'm picking Navy to win, and I'm going to give them a score. And my score prediction is Navy wins by 2. The final score will be 14-12. That's my prediction.
And if I didn't give you that over under, what would have your prediction have been?
Well, I still know that it's a very heavy run game, but if you didn't give me the over, I guess my prediction would be closer to yours with the 27-23. But the fact that the over is 32 and it's a triple option showcase. I mean, I don't bet, but you can't touch the over for this game. That you're asking to have your money thrown away. But I like that we did this. We did the predictions. We're going to possibly do something interactive with you guys, the fans, on Friday. So watch out on the Instagram to make that for that poll. But that concludes this week's show. And it was a really fun show. Glad to be back. Covered a lot of baseball. Covered some football. It's only going to continue. We'll start to get into hoops and hockey a little more. But before we conclude, we always want to give our usual thank yous. Liberty Shirt Co. You're not watching Fox Sports, then you're missing out on a lot of different things, including their shirts. All the guys on Fox are styling and wearing their shirts. If you guys need a flannel for this weather, this fall winter weather, nothing great like rocking a Liberty flannel, and they got a bunch of other great options too. So go check them out, and we always thank them for working with us. We also thank OP Sports Betting. Still going to get Greg on one of these days to give you guys a rundown. But if you want to have a little fun and bet the over for Saturday and go against the grain, you might as well use some crypto for that. So go check out OP Sports Betting. And of course, we want to thank Wild Chat Sports. We've talked about Kevin and the progress that he's made with that company. I think we mentioned it a couple of episodes ago. He did the interview with Jackson Olson, Hartford alumni, Savannah Bananas. So go check out that episode if you want to get more of an interview with him and get more of a glimpse of him. And, you know, continuing to thank TJ for his work on social media. And thank you guys, the fans, for continuing to listen. We've come a long way with this show and middle of the sixth season. It's great. And it's only going to continue. We got something special for you guys to end the season, so you definitely want to stay tuned and see what we have in store for that.